As researchers try to figure out which apps actually work, developers are already flooding the market. Dr. John Torres of Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center chairs an American Psychiatric Association task force charged with helping clinicians evaluate all these mental health apps.
It's very hard to give a static rating to these apps to say this one is a 99%, this one is an A+, because they change every 2 weeks. What we've been focusing on at the American Psychiatric Association is, can we create checklists and workflows that make people ask all the right questions? They look at, what is the privacy of this app? What happens to data I give it? Is it sold? Do I keep it? Who controls it? Is my data traded?
Is there at least a reliable minimal certification for medical apps?
As long as an app poses minimal risk and doesn't act as what they call a health device, like, say, a pacemaker, the FDA really is not regulating these apps. Anyone can probably put up a health app. You can make claims that are not backed up or substantiated. It makes it a very tricky space.
And are there people out there doing that kind of thing?
There was a paper that some folks did in Australia. They looked at apps for bipolar disorder. One of the apps recommended that folks drink hard alcohol when they're having trouble sleeping. Another app recommended that folks avoid contact with family members because bipolar could be spread by, quote, your negative attitude, which is completely false, completely wrong.
Well, and kind of dangerous, too.
Oh, and very dangerous, exactly. The subtler damage also happens if you're downloading apps for, say, therapy or self-help and you don't get better. You may think, wow, I'm hopeless, my case can't get better, I'm treatment refractory, and it may just be used an app that was complete gibberish.
You said in one article that apps could lead to a paradigm shift in mental health care. What did you mean by that?
We've been talking a lot about the current risks and barriers, and I think there's a lot of exciting potential in what these apps could do if done right, if validated in a clinical and scientific manner. What's most interesting for mental health is phones can capture a lot of behavioral information that may be very relevant to mental health and psychiatry. A lot of the way that we collect symptoms in mental health is we ask patients questions. We say, how are you feeling? How are you sleeping? How active were you? And these are things that our phones may be inherently picking up. And if you bring in, we could offer people real-time surveys. We could get physiological information such as heart rate. This whole wealth of new data could help us better quantify different mental illnesses. And what makes it especially exciting is these phones can also offer adjuvant services. We can do telepsychiatry visits via the phone. We can do automated self-help therapy programs, can deliver help via the phone. We can send people useful reminders. It's a beautiful potential. There's a lot of things we have to do before we get there.
So is it your hope that someday mental health professionals might be able to monitor patients through apps so that you can see when a patient might be veering off course and might be nearing a situation where they could have some sort of a breakdown or some other issue?
Exactly. I think for the right patients and the right clinicians who want to use these tools, it could be a very effective, affordable, scalable, and soon hopefully evidence-based treatment.
But it does feel like it could be a little big brotherish.
It certainly could be. That's one of the reasons why this isn't taking off right now and it's not mainstream. I think we have to first look at what are the barriers, especially what are the security and privacy concerns right now, and how do we create standards that everyone knows what's being recorded, what's being shared, who does the information go to.
Dr. John Torres, psychiatrist at Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center, thanks a lot for coming in. Good to see you.
Thank you.